This is the voice of the Trumpet Magazine. News, economy, politics, trends, discovery, health, family, the Bible, the future. This is Trumpet Hour.
Great to have you listening into Trumpet Hour today. I'm Joel Hilliker. We are just putting the finishing touches on the April 2022 Trumpet print edition. And the cover has the headline, COVID Money, How Big Government, Big Pharma, and Big Media Colluded to Terrify the Public and Make a Fortune. And it shows three morbidly obese fat cats, a politician, a doctor, and a reporter, sitting on top of a mountain of cash. We have several articles in this issue exposing the staggering level of corruption that is being uncovered and revealed right now in our government, certainly in America, but in many other nations as well, in our media, in our medical industry. And this is at the same time we're seeing terrible corruption in our business and technology sectors, in our education, and so many aspects of modern life. We're going to talk about this in our first segment today and the towering lesson we need to be taking from all of this corruption being exposed. In our second segment, we'll hear a report from Trumpet writer Richard Palmer about one specific example of this trend, the mammoth investment company BlackRock. This firm manages some $10 trillion in assets, thousands and thousands of companies, and it's increasingly brandishing this wealth and influence to try to reshape society. The CEO, Larry Fink, says he's looking for a fundamental reshaping of finance. And a whole lot more as well. We'll learn just what he means by that from Richard Palmer. Then we'll talk about Canada. We're seeing a stunning exposure there. Prime Minister Justin Trudeau has taken off the mask and turned full autocrat to crush the public protests against his COVID mandates. But we're going to look at another story about Mr. Trudeau exposing something else, just how much he's bowing down to communist China. Trumpet contributor Abraham Blondeau has a report about how the Canadian government just approved a Chinese state-owned company purchasing a Canadian lithium mining company for nearly $1 billion. It's an acquisition with serious security implications. And we'll finish the program with a last word about human nature. So it seems every day there are more revelations about some appalling form of corruption or injustice in the world. So many of them in America and in the other English-speaking nations that are supposed to be the bastions of freedom and hope. Look at what's happening in Canada right now. After 2 years of disastrous government policies on COVID, you have a peaceful protest and the government cracks down harshly, didn't talk with anyone, didn't consider the substance of what these people were protesting, just cast aside and trampled civil liberties, enacted wartime measures, and started beating people, arresting people, freezing bank accounts of anyone who supported these people. The mask came off. And this prime minister, who has presented himself as a champion of liberty and liberal democracy, suddenly exposed himself as an autocrat. And you've seen similar things with leaders in Australia and New Zealand. These are quiet, naturally beautiful, model democratic nations that have suddenly become police states and creating quarantine camps and other draconian measures. These are the same leaders who were so understanding and accommodating of the violent, destructive protests or the riots over supposed racial injustice not long ago at all. Now they're stamping out the supposed lawlessness of people who say they just don't want to be injected with an experimental vaccine. These events have exposed these leaders for who they really are. In America, the same authoritarian tendencies are being exposed, but so are a lot of greed and corruption. All these decisions these politicians have made, especially now with the vaccines, it has made them a pile of money. Andrew Miller brings this out in his article in this coming print edition. These congressmen who are supposed to watch out for public safety almost all of them receive checks from these pharmaceutical companies. And the people in these government agencies who approve these drugs, they used to work for these drug companies. They still have stocks in these companies. Most retiring FDA officials go on to work for these drug companies that they were approving drugs for. They're all in bed together. And all of these decisions that are being made, they all have political and financial implications for all of these people. And on top of that, these companies also have a huge influence on the media, giving big payouts, advertising heavily on these media platforms. Surely that is deeply influencing the reporting on these matters that are so consequential in our countries. This has all been exposed. So many of our vaunted medical institutions, especially in America, the FDA, the CDC, the NIH, the Mayo Clinic, you also have the World Health Organization globally. These represent the gold standard of modern medicine. They're supposedly above politics. They're here to save lives, protect the people, to guarantee people's health. Well, it's been exposed. That's not the case. These events have really shown just how they are making their decisions. These organizations are highly political. They have all kinds of conflicting interests. In this coming trumpet, Mr. Gerald Fleury, our editor-in-chief, he has an article about how coronavirus was engineered. And there are a lot of people, including American health officials, who have blood on their hands from that. And they just blatantly lied about their ties to these to this lab in China where this virus was created. This is just one example of something that has happened that has truly discredited these organizations. All of them meet with politics and big business. They're all involved in lobbying to get their agendas passed, and public health often takes a back seat. This has all been exposed like never before. You look at corporate America, the symbol and strength of the capitalist system, the free market system. Now, granted, there've always been scandals in business, but now we see how many of these big businesses that were built using America's free market system that are totally beholden to the communists within the American government and even communists within China. We see businesses supporting and funding radical organizations like Black Lives Matter. We see businesses like AT&T and Neustar being used by the government for political purposes. We see these companies giving data over that allows radicals in the government to spy on Americans and to punish Americans for their political views. We'll talk about BlackRock in our second segment today, this private company with enormous influence that is using that to thrust the nation to the left. We also see how the media have been exposed for their bias and corruption. There's always been bias in reporting, but what we see today goes way, way beyond that. You have news outlets like the New York Times. They've been exposed for having essentially printed articles that are scripted by the White House. They've accepted money from China to run Chinese propaganda in their paper. CNN has been exposed for financial agreements with repressive foreign governments to supposedly report from those countries. And you have news outlets accepting bribes from foreign governments to not publish unsavory information about them. You have scandals plaguing organizations like CNN. Jeff Zucker there went down over multiple scandals, some involving pedophilia. This is our media. This is what the organ that is meant to keep us informed about what is going on in the world. And we see, again, all kinds of conflicts of interest and corruption within these organizations that prevents them from being able to do their job. We've learned that the intelligence community in America is deeply, deeply corrupt. I don't know how many people always thought the FBI, the CIA, the NSA were good, but there was always the pro-American view. The CIA was there to protect America from foreign terrorists. FBI would stop interstate crime. Well, now we know these organizations are highly politicized. They've been weaponized by the left. The intelligence services have effectively become a fourth branch of government. They're operating outside of, and they're more powerful than all the other branches of the government. You have situations where you have FBI agents helping to plot attacks that they then bust up and act like they've protected the United States from threats. They were there instigating those attacks. They're ignoring mass shooters, and they're going after political opponents. You have the CIA and the FBI organizing a coup against the president of the United States. That's what has become of the intelligence community. Now, America's judicial system has also been exposed. This is meant to be the best in the world, innocent till proven guilty, all kinds of privileges and rights and freedoms that are guaranteed by our judicial system. But now we've seen all kinds of corruption. U.S. prosecutors setting low bail or no bail for violent criminals. We've seen guilty people set free. We've seen thugs released to the streets to murder people. And we've seen the innocent punished. We saw hundreds of January 6th protesters held in jail with no trial. It's quite extraordinary the way all of this is being exposed right now. This is really the age of exposure. We are seeing just how corrupt this world is. The lid is coming off. All of the secrets, everything that's taking place in the shadows, all of these institutions that have always looked so good on the outside that we've been taught to trust in, their rottenness is being revealed. Can you recognize it? What lessons do you take from it? Think about our beautiful schools and universities, a marvelous blessing, all this education for our young people. And what's happening there? Well, we've learned just how radicalized education has become. Communism, racism, transgenderism, even in elementary schools, being pushed on our young people. These are tomorrow's leaders coming out of these schools. It can be discouraging and disillusioning and even depressing that all these institutions that we were taught to trust in, that we want to be able to trust in, and to some degree need to be able to trust for the healthy functioning of society, they're being exposed for their rot. It's not that they can't do some good things, but it's easier than ever. When you see these things happening, it's easier than ever to see why God said through the prophet Isaiah, all our righteousness is as filthy rags. It really doesn't amount to anything good. It's painful to realize that your country, that your world is so sick, so diseased. And when we see these things, I think our tendency is often to believe that the problem is just with a few people. But if you are honest, it's becoming clearer and clearer just how deep and just how pervasive this corruption goes. And you see that picture in Isaiah 1. It prophesies about our modern nations. The whole head is sick and the whole heart faint. From the sole of the foot even unto the head, there is no soundness in it, but wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. It can be discouraging to see this being revealed. But we need perspective here. It's very, very important for the truth to come out. So much of this corruption has been hidden. You've had crimes taking place in the shadows. You've had money changing hands under the table, and it's being exposed. It's becoming obvious and plain. It's being lit up. The light is making it all plain. Gerald Fleury talks a bit about this in his coming trumpet personal. He's specifically talking about this latest revelation from John Durham about the Clinton campaign spying on Donald Trump. He says the truth keeps coming out, not because of John Durham or because of Republicans or even because of Donald Trump. What you need to realize is that God is causing the truth to emerge. He wants all of us to get a good look at the truth. Can you recognize it? God is exposing this evil. He wants it out there. He wants it uncovered. In fact, he says that before it's all over, he shall bring every work into judgment with every secret thing, whether it be good or whether it be evil. Jesus Christ said, there is nothing covered that shall not be revealed. We need to face these evils. Now, the question then is, how do you respond to this? What I see among a lot of people today is they think that we can turn this around. All this that's being exposed, you have a lot of people who think that we're on the cusp of a great awakening. Now, if you've followed the trumpet, you know that we believe, based on biblical prophecy, that Donald Trump is going to come back to power in the United States, that there will be another temporary reversal of some of these trends. But if you're honest, again, if you're really honest about everything that's being exposed all around us, you know this is not something human beings are going to be able to solve. We're looking at corruption. We're looking at sickness that truly is terminal. This is a nation. This is a world for whom the writing is on the wall. You read that story in Daniel 5 about the ancient kingdom of King Nebuchadnezzar and the handwriting on the wall that Belshazzar saw at his great feast. That's where we are in America. We are weighed in the balances and found wanting. And really, that's true of all nations. We have to recognize we cannot look to men to heal us or to solve these crises. Looking to men is what got us into this mess. We must look to God. We have to see God behind what is happening. If you study the Bible about this, you realize God is cursing us for our sins. These are curses. Just as God powerfully corrected the haughty king of Babylon, Bible prophecy says America and these other English-speaking nations, and ultimately all nations, are going to be profoundly corrected for all of this fraud, all of this corruption. This world is destined to crumble. And the reason for that ultimately is because the foundation has always been weak. This civilization was built on the wrong foundation. You can read about that in Mystery of the Ages by Herbert W. Armstrong. We'll send a copy of that to you. But the foundation of the present evil world was Genesis 3, where Adam and Eve rejected God. And God cut them off. Cut them off. We live in a world that is cut off from God. And we're seeing the results exposed more and more every day. You can see it. If you're looking, if your eyes are open, you can see it. And what that means is you get to choose. You don't have to choose to go along with a world that is really about to crumble, that is falling apart more every day. You can see what's happening, and you can choose a different way. God's way is not built on a faulty foundation. It is built on the foundation of Jesus Christ. It is the way of God's law, God's way of life, His perfect government. God is going to solve the problems of this world, and He does that by treating the cause. Now, that means changing human nature. God alone is able to do that, but man is not yet ready to yield to God. The curses are going to intensify until man does, but the only permanent and workable solution will only be implemented when man comes to deeply realize that we need God. And that time is almost here.
This is the voice of the Trumpet News Magazine. You're listening to Trumpet Hour.
How much power and influence can an investment company have in the world? The CEO of the world's largest investment firm seems to be doing his best to find out, as we will now hear in this report from Richard Palmer.
Former President Barack Obama famously said that he wants to fundamentally transform the United States of America. And in this mission, he had many supporters, but few have been proved more important than a man named Larry Fink. Fink heads one of the world's most influential companies, BlackRock. This company manages around $10 trillion US dollars of assets. That's the size of Japan and Germany's annual economic output combined. As the government in America prints money to keep the economy afloat, BlackRock is an essential partner managing that cash. It's also so embedded in the US Treasury that Bloomberg recently called it a fourth branch of government. Thanks to its revolving door of personnel rotating between left-wing administrations and BlackRock corporate headquarters, it has more influence in the Treasury than any financial company in history. And Fink is very open about what he wants to do with all of this influence. In a January 14th, 2020 open letter to CEOs, he stated, "I believe we are on the edge of a fundamental reshaping of finance." Fink is a leader of the ESG movement, which believes that investment shouldn't simply be about making money, but should rather support environmental, social, and governance goals. And Fink has a lot of money to invest. Now, this idea of kind of caring capitalism sounds great, but Fink is also a huge fan of investing in China. His social goals don't stretch as far as protecting 1 million Uyghur Muslims in concentration camps, for example. ESG really is all about this fundamental reshaping of finance and all of society. Asset management companies like BlackRock, they're not as, famous or prominent as the Apples, Googles, and General Motors of this world, but they can influence huge numbers of businesses. Individuals, businesses, even governments have companies like BlackRock manage their pension funds. And then BlackRock controls where those funds go, and they can easily deny businesses access to billions of dollars in investments. BlackRock is one of the big three passive asset managers, along with Vanguard and State Street. And these three own about 22% of the average S&P 500 company. Passive asset managers used to be just that, passive. They don't pick and choose which companies to invest in. Passive funds just put a bit of money into all of them. Historically, that's been a safe and a very reasonable investment strategy. But now BlackRock and others are using this fact that they own substantial portions of these companies to demand political changes in them. So this ESG movement tries to push these companies to the left. There are all kinds of grading organizations out there. Support Black Lives Matter or build windmills and you get a good ESG grade. Oppose that leftist agenda, and then some of your biggest investors will try to oppose your every move. In the fiscal year ending June 30th, 2021, BlackRock voted in 64,000 director elections, casting the critical vote 6,550 times. So, for example, last year, BlackRock and Vanguard backed a movement to replace three Exxon board members with activists opposed in principle to fossil fuels. Now, thanks to that book, Exxon is considering the adoption of a net zero target and the cancellation of major fossil fuel projects around the world. Stacey Lennox at PJ Media described the power this gives BlackRock, writing, "The federal government no longer needs to pass the Green New Deal. BlackRock's investment criteria will do it for them. Those who don't meet these criteria will see BlackRock, along with their other giant shareholders, voting against them repeatedly in these director meetings." In his latest letter, from this year to CEOs, Fink wrote, "Every company and every industry will be transformed by the transition to a net zero world. The question is, will you lead or will you be led?" Now, Fink and friends are also pushing aggressively diversity. According to comments obtained by Fox News Business in 2019, Fink told BlackRock that he would be implementing an aggressive diversity program, ensuring that a bunch of white men, as he put it, would no longer be in charge. "This isn't about diversity," one anonymous BlackRock executive told Fox News. "It is about identity politics and virtual signaling that a CEO of a public company shouldn't be engaged in." And they're pushing these policies on other companies too. In December, BlackRock said it wanted boards to be 30% diverse and to have at least one member from an underrepresented group. Goldman Sachs Group has similar targets. and lack of diversity was a major reason cited for voting against directors in the last few years. In his book, The Dictatorship of Woke Capital, Stephen Sukup writes that Fink is a crusader, a man on a mission who is bound and determined to use the power that other people's money, your money perhaps, gives to him to impose his beliefs on the capital markets and by extension on the nation more generally. Last summer, Reuters said that BlackRock's, quote, more muscular approach to corporate governance had helped drive support for climate and social issues to new heights at springtime shareholder meetings. Yet none of these concerns appear to tamper Fink's enthusiasm for investing in China, one of the most polluting and least woke countries on Earth. Last June, BlackRock became the first foreign business licensed to start its own mutual fund business in China. It attracted $1 billion from Chinese investors in its first week. Visiting China in 2019, Fink told the nation's top financial officials that BlackRock would put China first when investing there and said that it should be a Chinese company when operating in China. He told shareholders, "I continue to firmly believe China will be one of the biggest opportunities for BlackRock over the long term, both for asset managers and for investors." Real Clear Politics wrote that BlackRock's hypocrisy speaks for itself, punishing American companies that decline to apply entirely voluntary standards while being mute about Chinese companies' lack of audit oversight and enforcement. There could hardly be a more blatant case of double standards. And perhaps few investments illustrate these double standards, as well as BlackRock's investment in PetroChina, the publicly listed arm of the state-owned China National Petroleum Company. BlackRock will not be placing any activist directors on that company, yet it's happy to profit from a state-owned business with a history of engaging in businesses with convicted war criminals. So if this isn't really about sustainability and diversity, what is it really about? Well, we can see that by looking at some of Fink's associates. Fink was one of the first Wall Street executives to back Barack Obama for president, and it's not that the others on Wall Street were right-wing, but at first many supported Hillary Clinton. Since then, BlackRock has been invited into the heart of government. BlackRock executives were given key roles under the Obama administration, and then when the Obama people lost their job with Donald Trump's election in 2016, BlackRock was there for them. They went to jobs at BlackRock only to move right back into power when Joe Biden entered the White House. You can see this in just a short list of some of the top people at BlackRock. BlackRock investment executive Brian Deese was a senior advisor to President Obama. He now leads the National Executive Council under Mr. Biden. Adewale Adedema was Mr. Obama's senior international economics advisor, then chief of staff to BlackRock's chief executive, and now deputy treasury secretary to Mr. Obama. Michael Pyle worked in the Obama administration, became BlackRock's global chief investment strategist, and then chief economic advisor to Vice President Kamala Harris. We had more than a dozen people go from the Obama administration to BlackRock. No business has ever had this level of influence in the United States Treasury, not even Goldman and Sachs, and even some in the left are concerned about this. The American Economic Liberties Project Director of Research, Matt Stoller, said that BlackRock needs to be broken up and regulated. BlackRock CEO Larry Fink knows this, so he's been storing hack Democrats on ice so they can go into the Biden administration and make sure that doesn't happen. But there's more to this than profit. Yes, being friendly with the Democrats could protect them against regulation. Eric Holder, Barack Obama's, quote, wingman, was instrumental in ensuring no big financial firms or executives were punished in the aftermath of the 2008 financial crisis. And then he walked back to a legal practice funded largely by the same businesses he'd just gone soft on. But the truth is, Fink's goals align with Mr. Obama's and the radical left. In this January's letter to CEOs, Fink wrote, "Capitalism has the power to shape society and act as a powerful catalyst for change. Like Obama, he wants to fundamentally change America. When we harness both the power of public and private sectors, we can achieve truly incredible things," he said. That's what this is all about. He's part of a private sector that works hand in glove with the radical left. Governments can be voted out, as we saw in 2016, but BlackRock remained as a lifeboat for suddenly unemployed Obama economists. When Barack Obama promised to fundamentally change America during his 2008 presidential run, few people knew what he really meant, wrote Trumpet editor-in-chief Joe Flurry. He meant changing America from a constitutional republic, and what we are witnessing in the country today shows that to an alarming degree he succeeded. Now, capitalism with a conscience would be no bad thing. How many entertainment, media, and internet companies profit off family-destroying, sexualized content? The damage social media does to teens has been thoroughly charted. Yet, few investors are pulling out due to moral objections. Taking care of our physical environment is certainly a good and important thing for businesses to be doing. yet the net zero movement embraces actions of very questionable efficacy. Much of it merely pushes pollution and businesses abroad and makes the problem worse in the first place. This is not really about ethics or environmentalism. These are tools for transforming fundamentally the United States and other countries. In Amos 6 verses 4 to 6, God condemns those executives who lie upon beds of ivory and stretch themselves upon their couches and eat the lambs out of the flock and the calves out of the midst of the stall. They chant to the sound of viol and invent to themselves instruments of music like David, that drink wine in bowls and anoint themselves with chief ointments, but they are not grieved for the afflictions of Joseph. The modern descendants of Joseph today are Britain and America. You can see our free book, The United States and Britain in Prophecy, for more information on this. God condemns the rich who enjoy lavish lifestyles and don't care that the country is being destroyed. And this is why businesses like BlackRock will tear down American companies while building up China. Many involved in this movement, they don't fully understand the agenda, but the Bible is clear. There is a devil, and there's an evil spirit being who works to harm mankind and fight against God's plan. The modern descendants of Israel have played a role in that plan, and so they are a target for this attack. Satan is working to destroy Britain and America. Barack Obama and the radical left play a key role in that, as do their fellows in woke capitalism. This is about more than a political or business war. It is a spiritual war. So the key to understanding what is happening here isn't newspapers or investment guides. It's the Bible. It's scriptures that detail why God is allowing this to happen, how it will end, and what you can do about it. Mr. Flurry's article, Barack Obama in Bible Prophecy, is a great starting place to understand this warfare.
Thank you very much for that, Richard. Gerald Flurry is working on this book right now, showing how Barack Obama continues to push his agenda to fundamentally transform America. It's very interesting when you look at a company like this and how Obama has actually found a way to use this as an extra governmental tool. He's doing the same with some technology companies with heavy influence over mainstream media. And continues to accomplish his purposes, even though it's not within the normal channels that a politician would be able to do that. But you get someone like this on your side, and lo and behold, the influence is there.
Yeah, I think that is a fascinating component of his power. It's almost, I don't know quite whether it's right to put it this way, but it's almost like a loophole in the U.S. Constitution.
Right.
I mean, that doesn't quite get to what I'm saying, but there's a lot in the American Constitution, rightfully, that limits what a government can do to you. And the whole purpose of that is to limit government. You know, usually the most threatening entity you're going to be encountered with is the government. You know, businesses can't put you in jail, don't have a monopoly on armed force, all of this kind of thing. So there's very little to restrain what private individuals and what businesses can do. But the radical left has taken control, and Mr. Obama's friends have taken control of such a wide variety of all of these businesses. It gives them that whole second leg of power that is then very hard to curtail, because the only way to curtail it is to give the government power to curtail it in a lot of ways, which then means giving more power to the radical left in government. So you've got BlackRock, you've got Facebook and Google limiting what you can say online, and there's little that's been done, at least, to stop them from kicking people off their platform, to the point where these organizations can kick a sitting president off their platform. Mm-hmm. You've got businesses that are less famous, like Newstar, that we heard about last week with the Durham filings, where you've got a private company that handles internet traffic that is then able just to go through private data from a president because they dislike him politically in order to try and smear him. And again, that's not necessarily a government. I mean, there the lines between government and private industry get quite blurred when you have private intelligent contractors. But still, it's a huge amount of power that just comes from a movement that controls a whole series of businesses.
Yeah, it really does effectively hijack democracy. It hijacks the all of the checks and balances that were put in place by the founders within the government structure, because so much of this is operating outside of those checks and balances. And if you have a politician who is savvy enough to harness the power of these tools, and you have ideological alignment between certain politicians and some of these very influential businessmen, then they can accomplish a whole lot outside the purview of the institutions that are meant to prevent this type of collusion.
And I think that's a great way of putting it about kind of short-circuiting democracy. I mean, if you look at, say the government wanted to put in place a law that mandated business boards have 30% come from minorities, or quotas that for employment that have to come from minorities. You know, they could put that law forward, and if I don't like it, I could vote against it. Mm-hmm. And if I get enough people to agree with me, then maybe that will not happen. Or if it does happen, maybe it will be reversed. But if BlackRock does it, what can I do?
Right.
You know, I can't vote to say I disagree with this. It's happening whether I like it or not, because a few rich people want it, and somehow that's now a left-wing thing.
Mm. Yeah, quite extraordinary. I think it is just one more of these kind of the way that the world runs that is being exposed in recent months and years, and these events that we've been watching unfold have really made this very apparent in an extraordinary way. We've been talking with trumpet writer Richard Palmer about BlackRock, the world's largest, most influential company. He wrote about this in his trumpet brief on Monday. Go check that out. The title of that article, Fundamentally Reshaping America Through Finance. You can find that at thetrumpet.com. Thanks so much for your time, Richard.
Great to be here.
This is Trumpet Hour with Joel Hilliker.
One thing you need to make electric cars is lithium batteries. And which country dominates global lithium reserves? China. Well, now Canada is helping China cement this domination all the more, as we will now hear in this report from Abraham Blondeau.
Chinese state-owned corporation Zijing Mining Group Limited has acquired the Canadian mining company Neo Lithium for $960 million. Neo Lithium is developing a lithium mine in South America, which could prove to be a significant strategic asset due to the growing demand for lithium. Quote, prior to the takeover, Neo Lithium was working to establish itself as a key player in the global battery metal sector by developing some of the world's largest lithium brine projects in Argentina, wrote Resource World. Neo Lithium's 100% owned 3Q project is a unique high-grade lithium brine lake and salar complex situated in Catamarca, a region known as Latin America's Lithium Triangle. It is estimated to contain enough reserves to produce battery-grade lithium for 50 years, end quote. The mine in Argentina promises to be profitable. Quote, a key feature of the project is an unusually low level of impurities that should allow Neo Lithium to develop a project that will rank much lower on the cost curve than other comparable operations, Resource World explained. Lithium demand is projected to triple over the next 5 years due to many Western governments passing regulations that will force auto manufacturers to pivot to electric vehicles. The metal is also used in batteries for electric devices and in the production of iron, steel, aluminum, and heat-resistant glass and ceramics. Since the beginning of 2021, lithium prices have increased 280%. Currently, China dominates control of global lithium reserves. Quote, more than 80% of the world's raw lithium is mined in Australia, Chile, and China, wrote CNBC. And China controls more than half of the world's lithium processing and refining and has 3/4 of the lithium-ion battery megafactories in the world, according to the International Energy Agency. End quote. It is clear China has been positioning itself to have a monopoly on the electric vehicle battery supply chain. Lithium is not a rare resource, with 96.2 million tons of identified reserves around the world. The top three reserves are in Bolivia, Argentina, and Chile. The United States is fourth, with 8.2 million tons, but only has one lithium mine in operation in Nevada. China has the sixth largest reserve at 5.4 million tons, and it also controls 80% of the raw lithium processing in the world market. The acquisition of Neo Lithium by the Chinese government further solidifies China's hold on the global market and continues to make the Western world subservient to Chinese manufacturing through aggressive green energy policies. The Chinese company, Contemporary Amprex Technology Limited, supplies electric car batteries to Tesla, Daimler, and Toyota. Following Canada's election in September 2021, the Liberal government has set the goal for all new passenger vehicles to be electric by 2035. They are also promising more than $1 billion to install new charging stations, update infrastructure, and give people incentives to buy electric cars. The Canadian government allowed the Chinese-owned company to acquire Neo Lithium without doing a formal security review on the impact of national security. Quote, Liberal Industry Minister François-Philippe Champagne said that the federal government has initially looked over the project and had no qualms with it, True North reported. This transaction was absolutely reviewed to make sure there were no security risks, Champagne said. Why would Justin Trudeau's government allow China to purchase a profitable strategic resource while pursuing policies that make Canada's economy uniquely dependent on China? The answer is Trudeau's world vision has Canada revolving around China. When Trudeau first ran for leadership of the Liberal Party in 2012, his platform focused on Canada attaching itself to China. As Terry Glavin from the National Post explained, quote, Trudeau joined the race for the party leadership and invested his credibility in a big idea. China is the future. Beijing's promise of a win-win relationship would unlock untold riches for Canada's middle class. The power would not shift westward, but rather entrench itself in the Liberal Party's bastions within the Montreal-Ottawa-Toronto triangle. End quote. 9 years into Trudeau's leadership, this is exactly what has happened. There are deep ties between the Liberal Party, the Canadian political elite, and the Canada-China Business Council based in Montreal. The Trudeau family has deep personal connections with the Communist Chinese, as Trudeau admitted in 2013. His father, Pierre Trudeau, was instrumental in legitimizing Mao's Communist China, even praising it in a book he wrote on his visit to that country. There's a level of admiration I actually have for China, Justin Trudeau said in 2013. Their basic dictatorship is actually allowing them to turn their economy around on a dime, end quote. Not only is Trudeau chasing Chinese money, but there is also an ideological alignment. The Canada-China Business Council, or CCBC, was founded by Paul Desmarais, the wealthy Quebec businessman who owns PowerCorp, in 1978. Desmarais once commented that Mao was one of the four historical figures he admired the most. The CCBC's founding members include the Chinese state-owned company CITIC, PowerCorp, BMO Financial Group, Bombardier, SNC-Lavalin, Barrick Goldcorp, Export Development Canada, Manulife Financial, and Sun Life Financial. All of these groups are or were based in Montreal. Trudeau illegally shielded SNC-Lavalin from fraud charges and awarded it a multi-million dollar contract during the pandemic to make hospital beds that were never used. Interestingly enough, BMO invested in the Canadian pharmaceutical company AbCellera, which became the most valuable biotech company in Canadian history after winning many contracts to develop COVID-19 treatments. Quote, in 2018, AbCellera got $30.6 million from DARPA to lead one of four research groups aimed at developing antibody treatments for pandemics, the Globe and Mail reported. AbCellera also received $4.8 million from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and $175.6 million from the Canadian government to build antibody therapies for pandemics, end quote. However, Canadians can't buy stocks in AbCellera, only foreigners. The company revenue surged by 1,908% during the pandemic. Four former prime ministers, Pierre Trudeau, Brian Mulroney, Jean Chrétien, and Paul Martin, all have ties to the CCBC. Quote, Jean Chrétien led several Team Canada missions to China and played a critical role in rehabilitating the regime in the boardrooms of the world after its slaughter of students and pro-democracy activists in Tiananmen Square in 1989, wrote Glavin. Chrétien's son-in-law, André Desmarais, is honorary chairman of the Canada-Chinese Business Council, end quote. Justin Trudeau has promoted and empowered former CCBC members and Chinese businesses. Quote, Trudeau appointed Peter Harder, head of the CCBC, to lead his transition team, Glavin explained. Trudeau later saw to it that Harder was given the Liberals' top seat in the Senate, end quote. Immigration Minister John McCallum took $73,000 in free trips in China and was later replaced by Dominic Barton, who helped Trudeau win party leadership in 2013. McKinsey & Company, which formerly employed Barton, was deeply involved with China. Quote, McKinsey had advised a company involved in the construction of illegal islands in the South China Sea and drew unwanted attention to itself by holding a corporate retreat in Zhejiang within walking distance of a Uyghur concentration camp, Glavin wrote. The Trudeau government also tried making a partnership with the Chinese army, invested $1 billion in the Asia Infrastructure Bank run by China, and happily worked with Huawei in telecommunications infrastructure around Ottawa. It also allowed China to invest $1 billion in a network of retirement homes and to acquire NOSAT International, which supplies the United States military with satellites. Finally, two Chinese billionaires made generous donations to the Pierre Elliott Trudeau Foundation. BMO is a principal partner of the Trudeau Foundation. It has also been proved that the Communist Chinese government helped Trudeau win the September 2021 election by targeting conservatives in 13 electoral districts. Clearly, having Trudeau as leader of Canada benefits China. The network of Chinese influence is firmly entrenched in the Canadian elite. The decision to allow China to tighten its grip on strategic lithium supplies is just another step forward in fulfilling the vision of a China-Canada union. This is not just an economic relationship, but an ideological one. Trumpet executive editor Stephen Fleury wrote in the article, Wake Up to the Threat from China, quote, many, many of these elites are only concerned with money, but some are concerned with ideology too, and they find socialism and communism attractive. God repeatedly warned Israel against forsaking his law and looking to foreigners for prosperity, protection, and guidance. Isaiah 2 verse 6, for example, says that God, quote, has forsaken thy people, the house of Jacob, because they be replenished from the east, and are soothsayers like the Philistines, and they please themselves in the children of strangers. America has committed the same sin. Rather than trusting God to bless and defend them, our people have recognized and traded with communist dictatorships, and even invited communist professors from China and other nations to teach generations of young Americans and Britons. This has corrupted our youth, sapped our economy, and fatally weakened our nation, end quote. Canada is part of the end time nations of Israel, as explained by the late Herbert W. Armstrong in The United States in Britain and Prophecy. Bible prophecy warns that because of our national sins, our leaders will weakly surrender to Gentile powers. Quote, China has a game plan. There is nothing inherently sinister about that, Trudeau said in 2012. The truth is, however, there is something sinister and dangerous about it. China wants to rule the world and seeks to destroy any opposition. This is leading to the worst time in human history, but that is quickly followed by the most hopeful and inspiring moment in human history, the return of Jesus Christ. To learn more, read our article, After the English-Speaking Nations Fall, What Next?
It's time for today's last word.
Among all the scandals, crises, and problems filling our news cycle these days, there is a nasty common denominator, human nature. Not many people really understand this, but human nature is on a rampage in our world. Human nature is driving the partisan political battles, the divisive media reporting, the stunning double standards we're seeing in so many cases, the greedy corporate decisions, the radical reshaping of our education and our society. Human nature shapes our lives. It's everywhere. And what makes things even more troubling is that we have human nature too. Do you recognize human nature within yourself? The better you do, the more you can do about it. And as you do, you can enjoy much greater happiness, better relationships with other people and with God. But it's very difficult to see clearly within ourselves. And there's a good reason for that. It's because we like to think of ourselves as good. That's our tendency, and it really gets us into trouble. God made human beings to need His Holy Spirit in order to be complete. Now, lacking that and sensing our incompleteness, that inner void, that gives every person what Herbert W. Armstrong called an innate inferiority complex. He said, but not understanding what it is, he seeks to quell the painful sense of inferiority by conceit, by blowing up the ego, the self, with vanity and self-exaltation. So human nature doesn't want to acknowledge our limitations. Human nature never easily admits mistakes or errors or sins. So to avoid having to do so, we twist ourselves in mental knots to convince ourselves of just how awesome we really are. We become vain and self-righteous, but we never see ourselves as vain or self-righteous. And that's why, as Jeremiah 17, verse 9 reveals, the heart, the human heart, is deceitful above all things and desperately wicked. Who can know it? Our hearts can easily deceive us. We want to think of ourselves as good, so we become skilled at self-justification. We kid ourselves because we just won't admit how evil our hearts really are. The heart is incurably sick. That's what that verse says. And only God really recognizes that. Only God's Spirit can expose human nature. You have to pray to see yourself as God sees you, not as your human heart wants to see itself. We should never trust our own minds, but so often we do. And Jeremiah 17:5 says that when we do, we become cursed. Trusting sick human minds is what has made our whole world such a sick place. Don't trust yourself. Don't try to run your life your own way. Proverbs says that there's a way that seems right to a man, but the end thereof is the ways of death. Don't trust your incredibly deceitful mind that is terminally ill, or you will be cursed. Now, if you don't understand that, and if you don't understand human nature, you're not going to be motivated to ask God for the power to conquer it. Human nature wants to believe that it is awesome and So one effective and particularly deadly strategy it uses for feeling better about itself is just to run everyone else down. Human nature is negative and critical of other people. It makes you lack compassion for others because you're just looking at their faults. God's nature is the opposite of that. God's love doesn't focus on flaws. 1 Corinthians 13 says it thinks no evil. It allows for mistakes. It wants to think well of others. It forgives. It believes all things. It bears all things, covering faults rather than gossiping about them. And it hopes all things, remaining positive toward people. In his book, How to Be an Overcomer, Gerald Fleury wrote, "We need to understand that self-righteousness repels, while the true righteousness of God draws people to you as it did to Jesus Christ." People liked Christ. He was a nice man to be around because he didn't put people down or make them feel inferior. Here is a principle I hope you never forget. True righteousness never looks down on others. No matter who it is or how dirty the sinner is, true righteousness never looks down on the person. It hates the sin, but loves the sinner. Now, it really helps to clearly see yourself for the sinner you are. If you have that perspective, you'll be much more understanding of others, and you won't be touchy and sensitive. You won't be easily offended if others criticize you. That's another hallmark of human nature. And if you avoid that trap, that goes a long way toward helping your relationships. 1 Corinthians 13 also says that God's love is not easily provoked. It's not overly sensitive. It's not prone to anger or getting exasperated with others or having sudden bursts of emotion. And God's love also avoids another common trap of human nature, that is feelings of self-pity. We all have trials and difficulties, but if we don't respond properly, we easily get into a negative, self-absorbed mindset. And that is also a type of self-righteousness. The reason is God allows us to go through trials as a way to help us change and grow. Gerald Fleury explains in How to Be an Overcomer, if we get into a trial and don't see the need to change, it's easy to get into a self-pitying frame of mind. Trials are a way God communicates with us. Every trial you ever had served a purpose. God has promised he won't allow a trial you can't handle. He knows what's going on in your life. Self-pity is like cancer because it wipes out our enthusiasm to fight back. We just want to wallow in our self-pity when we have a fiery trial. We endure the trial, but we don't rejoice in it. We don't see it as correction from a loving father. That attitude won't change anybody. Just thinking about these elements of human nature, you can see just how dangerous it is when we're not fighting this. If you won't accept correction, then you will never change. And we see that kind of hard-headedness driving so much of what's happening in the world around us. You have to be open to God's correction and recognize that that trial that you're going through really is a tool that God is using to shape you and perfect you. And if you think that way, that's going to make you very positive and help you to battle the tendencies of your human nature. Evaluate how much your human nature is affecting your life and pray that God will show it to you. Ask yourself regularly whether what you're doing is a godly thing, whether the attitude that you have is right and godly, or if it's springing from selfish human nature. Do this and you will start to see your human nature more clearly. And that's a wonderful thing because then you can really start to make progress. You realize God's whole plan for extending salvation to us requires understanding and destroying our human nature. That's going to have to happen across society before these problems will truly be able to be solved. But we can undertake this process today in our own lives. As difficult as it is to see your own heart for what it is, what a wonderful difference it makes in your life when you do. I'm Joel Hilliker, and that will do it for today's Trumpet Hour. You can send me any thoughts on today's program to letters@thetrumpet.com. Thanks to my guests, Richard Palmer and Abraham Blondeau. Thanks to Dwight Falk and Nick Irwin for engineering and production. I'll leave you with this thought from Norman Vincent Peale. Throw your heart over the fence, and the rest will follow. Thank you for joining us on Trumpet Hour. Until next time, keep watching your world.
Been listening to Trumpet Hour on Trumpet Radio 101.3 KPCG and online at kpcg.fm. Understand your world.